One, two, three, four. Just another day at my dead-end profession. I'm living day to day. Yeah, listening to some good old country records on the radio. And yeah, what else can I say?
Welcome back to the show. I'm Ryan with Dave.
Hello.
And Bobby.
How you doing?
No, I'm doing good. There was an incident this week that reminded me why I don't own a gun. And
was it when two world leaders almost started a nuclear war with each other? Was that the incident?
I might get a gun.
Okay.
Was it when a heckler interrupted your set?
No. A in-home gun, you know, because there's all the biggest argument for firearms is home self-defense.
Right.
Home self-defense. Yeah. What are you going to do?
Stand your ground.
What are you going to do when those gang members break in through your door with an axe? And your two-year-old daughter's sleeping there, and they just take her like treasure, and then they kill you all. Now,
let me just say, I've been hoping for that my entire life. Most of my life is planning and prepping for some gang members to bust down the door.
And the
thing I thought you were saying you were hoping someone would get rid of your kid for
you. No.
Like,
I want to keep
start over.
I say this in my act, too. The NRA and ADT both, like, just prey on fear. They're fear mongers. It's always this hypothetical scenario. But really, I mean, I was open to having a gun, especially when I have got a family in a house. I'm like, all right, let's look up some statistics here, okay? So there's, 100 murders from home invasions nationwide every year on average. And let's see, accidental gun deaths, 18,000. Okay, you know what? I'm just going to go with the no firearm. Anyway, this week, this really sealed it for me, is our good buddy Adam Connie. He's a comedian here in San Diego, good friend of mine. He house sits for me.
Yes.
I'm having my bachelor party on Saturday. Aaron and I are going to be gone. So I text him, hey, can you house sit for me on Saturday? He replies, sure thing. Anyway.
What day is this?
This would be this previous Monday.
Okay.
Anyways, so that was that. And that particular night, the kid wasn't home. So me and Aaron are just laying in bed that night with our bedroom door wide open in our skivvies. And Adam thought, he just scanned the text. He didn't read it. He thought I said, can you house sit for me tonight?
Oh, you almost committed a hate crime.
And so, by the way, in the original text, he's like, I don't have a key. I gave him my garage code. So now he doesn't need a key to get in.
Right.
So anyway, I'm laying on the bed and Rufus kind of wakes up because he senses something's off. And all of a sudden, a large black man comes walking up our darkened hallway, and Aaron's only reaction is, hey. and I can't see him from my vantage point. I'm like, why? She's like, man in house.
She's like a dorm monitor in an all-girls dorm. Man on the floor.
So I just jump out of bed and go rushing the door to tackle whoever this is in my home.
Right.
Now, Adam has his fucking earbuds in, so he's not hearing any of this. He's just strolling up the hall like, they left their TV on. And all of a sudden, I just come running up, and again, if I had had a fucking .22,
right.
I would have put one in each leg.
Yeah.
Instead, I had time to cock my fist back and go, oh, hey, Adam.
And then to think again, but you know, I kind of owe him one. Let me get one in real quick.
Yeah, and that's the problem is it's not necessarily that people purposely do it, though sometimes that happens. It's all the accidents that happen. So the statistics say that you are 40 times more likely to kill a member of your own household than you are an intruder. 40 times. Not twice as likely, not three times as likely. 40 times as likely. Now, that could be a little bit deceiving because a lot of those are abused women who are killing their abusers who happen to be a member of their own household.
Right.
But again, not good for you.
No.
And also cue the NRA stepping in and say, well, sure, you're not trained properly.
Yeah,
you don't
right.
know what you're doing.
Yeah, well, they shouldn't combat laws that necessitate training before you get a gun then. But the big problem that I see is similar to what you're talking about. There's a lot of stories, and I think about this especially now as a father, of parents or fathers or whatever, and they're in the house and they hear a noise. Their kid's supposed to be out of town. They go and the kid is hiding in the closet to jump out and scare them or something like that, and they end up shooting them. And I could not imagine you would just never be the same again.
Yeah,
if you did that. That is to some extent the end of your life in certain ways once that happens.
And furthermore, my biggest thing is people are always like, "Oh, you anti-gun pussy." I'm like, I think guns are cool.
I love guns, dude.
I would love to have a gun. Here's the thing: I have a 15-year-old in the house, and they're like, "What does that matter?" I'm like, she's stupid.
Yeah.
And here's the thing about 15-year-olds. They're all stupid.
Yeah.
I'll say this. Not only are all 15-year-olds stupid, they also are super curious,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
super love to show off.
Yep.
So when they're like, well, just get a safe and a key. And I'm like, You don't understand. When it comes to a 15-year-old's curiosity and wanting to impress their friends, which is way more than any great force in this universe,
yep.
wanting to impress your peers,
yep.
Lex Luthor's fortress of security
right.
would not be enough to keep this kid away from the gun and going, hey, look at me.
Yeah, exactly.
100, it's like, I love motorcycles. I don't think any 16-year-old should have a motorcycle.
Right. And by the way, about the back to Adam coming in, there is no better tell that you are kind of a little bit racist.
Right.
Then when it's a black guy, and then all of a sudden she's just like, black man in the house. I didn't stop and go, well, why does that matter? Why?
Yeah.
Well, and I didn't even realize that I was a little bit racist during the course of the story. It wasn't until I told it to someone like a day later.
Right.
They're like, yeah, I texted my friend, but he misread the text message. And so he came in there. We were going to sleep. It was really scary. They're like, oh my God. I'm like, yeah. And it was a black guy too. So, and also that like we both stopped. Like, why did you mention that? I'm like, I don't know.
Ryan's like, why did you assume his gender? Oh, wait, that was me too. Never mind. This is fun because I got the Rashomon treatment. I got Adam's version before I heard your version. Adam told me he just skimmed the text, so he fucked up the day. But he said coming in that night, he misread several red flags in that situation. He pulled up to the house. Your cars were still here. He's like, oh, that's weird.
They must have Ubered.
That's literally what he thought. So maybe they Ubered. Okay. So he approaches the house. Here's the dogs bark. He's like, normally the dog's outside. That's odd the dogs are inside.
Yeah, because it's his job to let them in.
He sees the TV on through the bedroom window. Oh, they left the television on. How strange. Like all these repeated red flags, and he still just did not.
Maybe I should knock. Did not.
Yeah, and I always loved, I thought Adam Carolla had a really unique solution to this situation. You want a gun, you want to protect your family, but you don't want an accident to happen. Get a shotgun and load the first one with rock salt. And then if you shoot somebody with rock salt, trust me, they're going down. It doesn't matter if they have a gun, doesn't matter what else, they're going down, but they're not dead. And that's a great solution. That's one of the few times I was like, oh, fuck, that's actually really smart. That'd be a good way to get around it. But the idea that you just have a loaded gun with lethal rounds sitting around your house, sorry, no matter how well-trained your kid is, that is not safe.
Right, for sure.
Because they will figure it out. And there's a great story on This American Life about exactly when that happened. And it was a girl who grew up, I think she was in like Texas. She grew up around guns her entire life. She had been at the shooting range since she was four. She knew gun safety. She knew everything about how to treat these guns. Her parents had no problem leaving her or her eight brothers and sisters alone with them. And then one day she was literally practicing for a play where they commit suicide. And she went, because she's a stupid 14-year-old girl, and got the gun, which she assumed and thought was unloaded, and checked, and there's nothing in the magazine. And she did the whole put it to her head and did the whole line, and then casually wasn't pointing it right at her head when she pulled the trigger. It went off because there was one in the chamber.
In the chamber, right.
And her family would have just thought she committed suicide.
Right. And honestly, like if you're a gun person and you're like, well, not my kid. My kid would never fight. I've already taught my kid.
Right.
Think of this. If you have a teenager and a gun, think of how many times that you've been going somewhere and told them to take a jacket. What did they say to you? I won't need one. Well,
right. Why
don't you just have one in the car that you don't have to carry around, and just in case you'll have it. But I won't. I won't need that. Imagine that and apply it to the guns.
That, and then I think, you know, it depends where you live, too. Like I've said before, I heartily believe if you live out in the boondocks where law enforcement is a long ways away and you never know what's going to happen and you don't know what's going on, you should probably have a shotgun. You live in the suburbs with low crime rates and
right.
cops have a 60-second response time, you're just putting in a danger that's probably not necessary.
Well, that's the thing. When we lived in Lakeside, I was actively shopping for a firearm.
Right.
Because I'm like, home invasions happen in this neighborhood all the time.
Or if you go to elementary school in Denver, you probably need a shotgun in the school.
Oh, Jesus.
Wow. But once I moved here to the suburbs and bought my nice house and I looked up the crime statistics, and there hasn't even been a break-in in fucking 3 or 6 years or something,
right. No
need for a gun.
Yeah.
Well, anyway. There was that break-in a few nights ago when a black guy tried to get in.
Yeah, that was the first. He broke the streak.
Speaking of which, by the way, just so you know, we're not going to hate on guns, and you guys should start planning for this, especially you gore generates out there. I do want to plan sometime this fall a white trash weekend camp out in the desert with a bunch of us, including some firearms, some dirt bikes, and unrelated to either of those things, not when we are doing those things, but unrelated, maybe some hallucinogens. We'll see what happens.
We'll see.
I just want to go on record real quick. Was it This American Life you were talking
yes.
about? I don't like plugging their podcast unless they're going to plug ours. So
okay.
make sure that happens.
I'm going to call it Byron Glass
yes,
right after
you.
This.
Another thing is, got my bachelor party coming up this weekend. Yes. Bobby, you're going to be there.
I am
right?
going to be there.
Dave will not. You'll be in Michigan.
I will be in Michigan.
All right. Well, here's the thing. So I invited like my close friends, right? It's amazing how much a bachelor party will suddenly bring people out of the woodwork that would not return phone calls previously.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And didn't invite me to theirs. The
really?
Audacity. Okay, so I have friends where I have been we lost contact for one reason or another, but I've actively tried to pursue some sort of relationship with them because they were formerly, you know, best friends. One of which, like, I texted and called so much. He opened his own business, to be fair. I mean, so he became super obsessed with running it. But I texted and called so much without a response that I finally had to be like, did I fucking do something to you? You know, and we've talked about that before. like, what did I do to not hear back from you for 2 years? You know, 2 fucking years, not a, hey, I'm busy. And then all of a sudden this guy, out of nowhere, so what up with the bachelor party? Fuck you. Are you serious? you want to know what happened to that? And then also, the guys that did not invite me to theirs.
Right.
The audacity. they without batting an eye, so what's up with the bachelor party? Like, you won't be going.
It's but an extension of the wedding, because you get a lot with the wedding itself. Like,
yeah.
People are like, hey, where's my invitation? Like, are you serious right now?
Yeah.
But wait, you were inviting people to your bachelor party? Because I always thought that you don't invite people to your own bachelor party. It's supposed to be the job of the best man who's planning the bachelor party.
Not quite. I mean, it can differ, okay. But in my case, you know, I have a lot of different groups of friends, you know. There's the Gore Jenner's is the main one, but there's some outliers. So my best man, Carlos, he wanted to make sure that all the important people, you know, were there. So he's like, give me an ideal list of people that you'd want to be there. So, you know, and then I give him, he's like, all right, that's all I need from you. I'll take it from there.
Right.
See, with mine, my whole situation was I was just like, let Damien take care of this.
Yeah.
And Damien fucked it up.
Yeah,
so.
Of course.
Speaking of wedding invites, by the way, I sent out the wedding invites. If you're listening and you got one, and your response is, oh, I was going to give that to you when I saw you next.
Which
don't.
Is exactly what I did, by
yeah,
the way.
That's true.
Well, at least you see me 3 times a week. There's people I don't see, like, but once with like once every 3 weeks to 4 months.
I just wanted you to realize
I put a stamp on it.
I wanted you to realize you wasted a stamp on mine.
Fair enough.
Yeah, the bachelor party thing is funny. I find it weird that guys would want to go, like, would find that as the appealing thing. Like, ooh, I want to go to the bachelor party. Because for me, the bachelor parties are always hit or miss. I've had the one.
Oh,
where,
yeah.
Like, half the time it's a chore to go to somebody's bachelor party.
For sure.
Because there's the possibility that you're going to a strip club. And I fucking hate strip clubs. And, like, there's just all this other stuff. Sometimes it's fun as shit. Yours happens to be fun. I don't even know if you know what's going on at yours. So I'm not gonna tell you. But there is some stuff that I'm excited to go do. So yours seems fun. But a lot of bachelor parties, it's like, oh, man, do I have to go? Like, I guess I was there when Rick met his wife. I should probably fucking go to his bachelor party. But do I fucking have to go to this strip club again?
I've had a lot of those where, especially if you are like the odd man out that doesn't know that whole group of friends, and you got the sole invite, you know, oh my God, I will do any, I'll cut off my fucking pinky toe to get out of that one.
Right.
Especially if you know there are a bunch of horny dorks that have hired a stripper and are just way too excited about it.
Oh,
that's the worst, when the awkwardness level just gets ratcheted up like 1,000%. You're like, you're embarrassed for everyone at the party. Like, oh my God.
There's the guy that's never done coke that's just done coke.
Yeah.
And then you have to deal with that.
Yeah.
And that is not fun. And then there's the overly, where's the girl's gonna get here? Where's the girl's gonna get here? I'm like, you need to go rub one out in the bathroom first, because this is embarrassing. And again, I don't like being in a just big, like, room full of horny dudes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a weird, weird situation. It's also, we had one where it was a good buddy's bachelor party. We had to go. It was like, it was absolutely, we've known this guy since we were 12. We went, it was in Vegas, and the
we were 13 by then.
Yeah, right. The brother-in-law-to-be, the brother of the woman he was marrying, was all about the strip clubs and wouldn't stop talking about it.
Ugh.
You know, like you're doing the pre-party thing with your boys, you're having fun getting ready in the hotel room. Oh, which strip clubs are we going? We go to Spearmint Rhino, then where are we going? Where are we going? And we're like, I guess we'll go to a strip club eventually, but fine, can we talk about it? Get to dinner. Man, guys, finish up that meal. We got to get to the strip clubs as soon as possible.
Yeah,
you
want to
get there
the
early
worst.
Bird. And then when you finally do end up, all right, fine, let's go. We've gone and done our fun shit. Let's go to your strip club. We go to the strip club. You finally drag the guy out. All right, where's the next one? What's the next strip club we're going to? Those ladies are stale. We got to get on to the next one. You're like, bro, this isn't about you, one. This
How
is about the
money
bachelor.
Do you have?
Yeah. And then two, like, what is your affinity for being cock teased? Like, you're willing to pay a lot of money for something that's actually rather unpleasant.
I've said this many times. Yeah, I don't absolutely. Like going to strip clubs because I feel my intelligence is being insulted.
Yeah.
When the girl comes around and goes, oh boy, everyone else here in here is a dork, but you're really handsome and cool. Oh, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, exactly. Dude, I took a friend of mine, like, years ago. I had a friend in town and he had never been to a strip club and he wanted to go. So I was like, all right, I'll take you. I gave him the rules. I'm like, don't make eye contact. Especially when they're walking around.
Right.
And if any of the girls ask you if you've been to a strip club before, you say yes.
Yeah.
He broke both rules in like 3 minutes. And I was like, Jesus Christ, this guy.
Oh, well, I've already told you before I had a friend that I said, hey, don't for any reason think these people like you.
Right.
And yeah. Then later on, he's like, dude, I know what you said, but you're wrong. You're wrong.
I know what you said, but funny enough, one actually liked me.
Yeah, but yeah.
I won't need a jacket.
Now, who's worse? And maybe they're the same. Who's worse? The we got to go to strip clubs guy or the this is my one night out of year. I need to cheat on my wife guy.
Oh, the second guy is worse.
For sure. Oh, yeah.
The second guy is worse because then you also don't know what your obligation is.
Yeah, you're right. Saddled with that knowledge.
Yeah. Well, and I have a certain rule, which is especially if somebody's asked me to be like in their groomsman party. Like I have friends who've been like, oh, hey, be a groomsman.
Right.
I actually take that seriously. If somebody's going to have me stand up next to them at their wedding, I think part of the role you take on as a man who does that is you are somewhat responsible for making sure that other man keeps his vows later. Later in life, like they have said, come up and stand next to me when I promise to be with this woman and promise to not cheat on them.
Wow, you read way too into it.
Maybe, but I take that.
You're just supposed to go to Men's Warehouse and stand there for an hour, bro. I don't know what all this fucking lifetime goals is.
It makes sense why
I was a groomsman in a wedding. I never seen the guy again.
I do take that seriously, and so if somebody's like, I'm planning on. I'm gonna see if I can't bang one of these chicks. I'd be like, no, dude, you got a wife. You got a kid and a wife at home. What are you talking about?
Hey, forgive me for sounding like a prude, but I always found it weird when it's just acceptable for the bachelor party to be like, all right, one last time to fuck around before you get married.
I'm like,
you've been with her 6 years.
Yeah, I'm not single.
I don't think that she'd be like, yeah, before we were married, like, but we had lived together and had a kid.
It's still cheating.
Yeah.
Literally the night before you got married. Yeah. Right. Okay, yeah, perfect.
I may have brought gonorrhea to the wedding. Yeah. So, like, it's so acceptable to, like, some people, which is so bizarre. And again, when you're party to that, you're just like, oh man, I can't be the guy that says anything. This isn't my bachelor party, but oh my God.
Right. But then also you are a party to it if you're sitting there and not saying anything. And then, you know, like you are a part of what is going on at that point, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Which is why I had a unique idea. I do know this aspect of it because it was my idea. Is leading up to when these bachelor parties and bachelorette parties for my wedding are being planned, there was a lot of like, well, what are you guys going to do? A lot of the bridesmaids and a lot of my groomsmen are together. They're your husband and wife, boyfriend, girlfriend. So each is going to be at this bachelor party and bachelorette party. And from either side, a lot of distrust started to come up. It did. And I'm like, wow, they don't trust each other very much. And then it just turns out they didn't trust me. They're like, normally I'd be like, it's okay, but you're going to Shores' thing, so he's gonna feed you meth and make you fucking two hookers.
You were the one who demanded those chicks came around topless.
Right. So anyways, at first I was like, fuck you, and we're having our thing, and you're having your thing, and blah, blah, blah. But then I started to really think about it. I'm like, all right, it's causing problems, and I know this. No one can really have a good time if they're thinking when they go home the next 3 days is, I know something happened. I know something happened.
I better have seen slightly more vagina than they saw penis.
Right.
Slightly more.
Right. And this is on both sides. I mean, I'm not just singling out the girls. Like, both sides are like, oh, they're going to do something. They're going to do something because they think I did something, so they're going to be getting back at me the same night.
Mutually assured destruction.
So, mutually assured destruction, exactly. So, finally, I'm like, you know what? Here's what's happening. We're going to start off separately, but we end the night all together. There is no who did you sleep with.
There you go.
There is no what happened last night. You were fucking there. Everyone there loves strippers and drugs.
Right.
I'm like, why keep it separate? The girls are getting a male stripper. I'm getting a female stripper. And at the end of the night, we're all going to end up together. I know that much. That's the only thing I know.
You know how some couples, like, to spice things up, they'll go to a bar, like,
right,
separate from each other, pretend they don't know each other, and yeah, they're like, so that's what's going to happen with these two parties. They're going to be in disguise, all of them. They're going to like meet up and pretend they're all strangers. Get it all out of the system.
Yeah, and then they have a big Roman orgy.
It's okay. We're not married yet.
Hey, Bobby, let me ask you something real quick. Our friend David Novin, have we mentioned him on the podcast before?
We have mentioned him a few times indeed.
Why does he think you have a PhD?
I don't know. He brought that up on a post once that also got mentioned on a podcast, and I just want to come clean because I don't want to have a stolen valor thing later
on.
Like
I feel like you're trying to play it off. Like
I know.
You have a PhD.
I do not indeed have a PhD.
I
have
you're trying to pull a fast one on people. I really do.
He's got an MD. You hear that, everyone? MD.
I mean, why do you bring your PhD and set it on the table every time we record?
That's what it is, too. It's a badge.
And what is Trump University anyway? Is it?
I mean, it's bad enough you wear the cap and gown with your honor cords.
Yeah,
he's like that wise old bird from the Muppets. He's always wearing his...
I didn't even finish my thesis for my MED. I did all my coursework and haven't even defended my thesis for my MED, much less a PhD. But that came up a couple times, and I feel all icky about it when I see people make that mistake online, because obviously they're just doing it. In some sense, it's a compliment. They're like, oh, Bobby Smarty much have a PhD. But also, I feel like that stolen valor all of a sudden, where I'm like, no, I wasn't in the army, I swear.
Right.
Don't give me the discount.
I've had a lot of that with MMA, because when I first got into comedy, it's like, oh, you know, you used to fight MMA amateur. And then it was like, he was a pro.
Yeah.
And then it was, he was in the UFC.
Yeah.
And so now I have to run away. Like, I was never in the UFC. I never came close.
Yeah.
And because otherwise, I'm going to have someone come up to me like, heard you're telling everyone that you were in the UFC. That's absolutely what it leads to.
Now,
on the flip side of that, our friend Allison Gill actually just got her PhD.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of funny. I'm sure she listened to this. Hopefully she does. But she just posted. She's like, hey, guys, no need to call me doctor. And I'm sure she was being facetious, but I really wanted to comment, like, I actually wasn't planning on it. So don't worry about that. Because we're friends. You know, it doesn't matter. I wouldn't call you doctor. Although I would love to see if you defended your thesis, I want you to show up wearing a gi.
First of all, that would be awesome. It's a gi, but with the graduation hat.
Like, come on, motherfuckers, come at me.
You use the, what's the cord that goes around your neck as the belt?
No, he chokes people out with it.
So yes, definitely not a PhD. If you hear anybody saying that Robert Timothy, that PhD, was in that flat earth debate, be like, he's not a PhD, he's kind of an idiot. But also something interesting, I went to a kid's show this week.
Of course you did.
Yeah, it was, my nieces were in one of those.
I thought,
like,
you weren't allowed within, like, was it 100 yards?
I got a special dispossession from the court. They said this one was okay. My nieces were in one of those, like, children's musical type shows, and I went there. It was actually fairly neat. It was fun to see, like, the little kids jumping around and dancing and stuff. I got a great idea when I was watching it, though, because I was in this theater. It's beautiful.
Battle Royal.
It's huge, yes. It's a huge theater, and it seats a lot of people, and it was like, 50 to 60% full, just of like parents and aunts and uncles and that kind of stuff. And it's like, I'm like, this is a pretty fucking good crowd. I was like, A, we should have a mic here before every time they have a kid show.
Sure.
We should do a mic beforehand, because there would be plenty of audience members. But number two, okay, so parents are automatically going to come to these events, and grandparents and uncles and aunts, they're automatically going to come to these events with their kids, right? So what if instead of having these little kids perform these kind of like obscure musicals that nobody's really interested in seeing, what if we had them act out stuff we would like to see little kids do that would actually be interesting to see them do? Like, we have a bunch of six-year-olds.
Oh, like kill each other over a piece of meat?
Yeah. Yeah, some kind of fight.
One of the flies.
If you had a bunch of six-year-olds act out like the scene from Pulp Fiction, only you switched out like motherfucker with My Good Friend. So it's like... say what again, my good friend? And you just have like the little black kid holding the gun at the other kids.
I think the motherfucker really sells it, you know?
Yeah,
I think a Mulholland Drive would be...
Who wants to be the lesbians?
Yeah, okay, so first of all, I like how you insinuate that people don't want to see their kids in anything.
They don't want to see the other people.
Parents don't care. He's just like, parents don't care.
They care about seeing their own kid. They love it, but you have to sit through a bunch of other people's kids to do it. Wouldn't it be better if you were entertained the whole time? You were super interested. You're like, I cannot wait to see the next scene that they do.
They are entertained. Even when the kid is off in the background doing nothing, they're entertained by that. They're like focused on the camera.
Yeah, but how much? Okay, let me ask you this. Objectively speaking, you're sitting in the audience waiting for your kid to come on. You have to watch some 5-minute little play in between between. Would you rather see Mary Poppins for the 105th time, badly acted with bad choreography and singing, or a child's rendition of the opening scene to John
Wick? Oh my God, Dave. I think Bobby thinks he had to watch all the other wives give birth on the maternity ward the same night as his kid. Ah, shit, I got 19 more of those. Sir, you can't be in here.
Honestly, I want to see the John Wick. I want to see him do a bunch of headshots on the other kids with a Nerf gun and them go down.
Honestly, I'm hoping for the guy from the beginning of the podcast who's going to kick the door in and take my two-year-old away like a treasure. So I can be like, finally, free of that burden. All right, no more plays for this guy.
I just think that would be a super interesting thing to do. And you wouldn't even come if you were just a parent. You'd be like, fuck, I want to see a bunch of little kids act this out. I want to go.
I don't know.
I see what you're saying. Like, for instance, you know, my kid played softball for a season, and her team, not her, yeah. her team sucked.
Yeah.
So the other team would always just be always up to bat. You know, they'd be in the out. Anyway, when it came time for them to be up to bat, there's so many kids in this team that I'd have to be watching these other kids the entire right. time. I'm like, motherfucker, I've paid hundreds of dollars to watch her sit on a bench and eat oranges for the majority of the time.
Slaughter rule!
So, yeah, right. So, the thing was, is that once she made it to high school, no more intramural, she had to make the team.
Oh, yeah.
She didn't, and it was very heartbreaking because she was really disappointed. I hate to see her disappointed. But at the same time, in the back of my head, I was like, yes.
That's right.
Hated the heartbreak, selfishly loved it.
I mean, you could even have them, those kids could come up and just mencia somebody. Like some kid just comes up and does a 5-minute Louis C.K. bit and gets back off stage. That'd be great.
I'd be down with that. Oh, by the way, we have a listener question. By the way, I really loved doing the listener question segment a few episodes ago. That was a lot of fun, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And I put up the same prompt as last time. Like, hey, if you have anything, we'd love to do it. And this time, people tried to be funny.
Yeah, I hate when everyone goes for low-hanging fruit.
Like, yeah.
Yes, obviously, this is a chance for everyone to make a joke. Can we not?
Skittles or Starburst. You're not even creative. Anyway, but one guy did, and I appreciate that. We have a listener question from Colin, and it looks like Colin just moved here and is doing stand-up, but he's very new to San Diego. So he says, I would like to hear your guys' take on why lots of comedians in SoCal feel the need to hate on each other rather than help. I'm not from here, and it just blows my mind how stuck up some of the fucking open micers are around here.
Yes.
Stuck up open micers. What is he talking about?
Now, first of all, I should say I've had a very different experience. I've had a bunch of very nice people help me out a lot in San Diego.
You paid them.
Yeah, right? No, I've had a lot of really beneficial, very, very positive experiences with the stand-up community here. I've had a lot of people. I ran my own open mic for a couple of years. We had some great people come through. I've got to go on.
So you're the one
shows.
He's talking about.
That's right. I got to go on some other people's shows. I've had headliners take me around and take me to a bunch of shows everywhere outside of San Diego. I have been very lucky. At the same time, I do see, especially online, people talk a lot of shit that's unjustified.
Yeah.
And I think some of it comes from an attitude that I think is incredibly toxic to comedy, and it was spelled out perfectly on the show I'm Dying Up Here. It's a Showtime show, and they have one of the comedians saying, like, oh, you think it's okay that everybody's laughing at that other guy? If you think that that's okay, you should just quit comedy. It should stab like a dagger every time somebody else gets laughs that you should be getting. You should hate that. And everybody applauds like, yes, what a great comedy ethos. It's like, fuck no, that's a horrible comedy ethos. That's not the way laughter works. Laughter's not like money where we're all going to split up this $10. And if you get six, that means I only get four. Laughter is one of those things where if you do well and you get the crowd laughing, they're more likely to laugh later on. It's not like they have a set amount of laughs they're going to use up.
Right.
And I think some people go into it with that mentality, and any success they see from somebody else pisses them off. And it's the silliest concept.
I'll be the asshole on this one. I don't mean like purely that point of view, but there are plenty of times where I see the audience laugh at garbage comedy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fuck you guys for laughing.
Yeah,
at that.
No, I see both sides.
But that's different than fuck that comedian for getting laughs. I see a good comic go up and start doing really well and killing. And yeah, it might make you a little nervous. Like, can I live up to that if I'm coming on after them? But it also means, fuck, this crowd is good. This crowd is warmed up. I know that they're going to laugh for that. You know what? You go up in front of a crowd, sometimes crowds won't laugh for anything. And so at least what you've been told is, hey, this crowd can work. And by the way, I've been given some data on what works on this crowd. I can hear what they're reacting to. That is a good thing for you to have later on to make that crowd laugh. And that weird idea people have of like, fuck those guys. I can't believe they're being successful. It's super toxic.
Oh, for sure.
I'll say this. Things are a lot different than when I first started, which was more than 8 years ago, is because when I first started, if you were an open micer, whether you thought they were funny or not, you by default looked up to the class ahead of you.
Yes.
You know, those were, you know, any scene full of open micers, there's like, there could be anywhere from 30 to 300 open micers, but not everyone gets past that. Why?
Right.
Because open mics suck.
Yeah.
That stage of your career should suck, and it's really hard, and there's no audiences, and it's really hard to get better, and people are shitty and cutthroat. So not everyone makes it past that, and they're bitter about it. But no matter what, even if I didn't like there was a guy, Scott Bowman. He was ahead of me when I was doing open mics, and he was a jerk to me and a lot of other people. But
and he's a horrible comic.
De facto, well, not a lot of people found him funny, but de facto, because he got past open mics and because he was a booked comic, you just showed him some moniker of respect.
Right.
You know, you did, and I didn't like it, but that's the way it was. But now, I've noticed this, and it doesn't happen to me, but I've seen it happen to a lot of comics. There's these people that have been doing comedy for like 10 minutes that are going on Facebook and going on comedy groups and lecturing people on their ethos on comedy and calling out specific headliners. Like, I saw some chick that sucks. She can't get any paying work. She's not even a comic. Like, oh, that Dallas McLaughlin, let me tell you something about how to be a comic.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, why are these people that have not learned how to do this yet lecturing people ahead of them? And that's such a weird thing. Secondly, and this is really weird, that was never the thing when I started, is doing bringer shows. They also suck, but we always saw those as the next level above open mics. You went from open mics to bringer shows, and all the way we looked at it is that was you earning your stripes for about a year or two, you know? And now bringer shows have become like this scarlet letter on people, where if they do a bringer show, like, that guy's a bringer, never book him anywhere. I'm like, that doesn't make him a bad comic. You just, you gotta get stage time somewhere.
See, I don't see that as much as I see people who get into the bringer circuit and stay there.
Well, yeah, that's just,
That produces such garbage comics.
It
but
really
they
does.
Think they're really good because they're always able to bring a crowd, and it's just.
Yeah, well, one of the problems, and I started out in the bringer show circuit, so I had this exact same problem, so I'll be the first to admit why it's an issue. You think you're good because you're speaking to your audience.
Right.
You have brought 10 or 15 people, and 10 or 15 people in that crowd will make the huge difference. It'll get people going, and everybody else will laugh. You will think you're better than you are, when in fact, you need the exact opposite. You need to be going into a room, a cold room, that doesn't have people laughing, that doesn't know you, that doesn't think anything about you, so that when you come up, the only influence they have of whether you're funny or not is the quality of your material.
Right.
That is what you need. And so you get lulled into a false sense of security with those bringer shows. And then when you get out on the open market and you realize, oh shit, my talent is not up to where I thought it was because I had this false sense of security, all of a sudden that can lead to bitterness as well. Because now, well, why aren't we laughing? It's because of this asshole who's here. He's ruining the crowd before I go up. Or fuck that guy, he's getting laughs and he shouldn't. Here's the way it works. If you're funny, you're going to get laughs. And maybe it won't work all the time. There'll be bad audience nights. We've all seen those where, you know, we've seen killers go up and bomb. That happens. The two things that are sure in comedy, you're gonna bomb no matter what, no matter how good you are. And then number two, if you're funny, eventually they will laugh. If you're funny and you keep at it and you keep going and you put the work in and you grind, eventually they will laugh. And it seems to me that the people who put the work in and grind and get that laughter are the ones who talk the least trash.
Well, I think also is I think a lot of it comes from frustration and bitterness. I've always said this, when anyone goes into comedy, you have an idea of what it's going to do for you. You have an idea of how fast things are going to go. I don't think there's a person among us that went into stand-up comedy and didn't, for just a second, maybe just a second or maybe longer, had a fantasy of skyrocketing to success. Right. Oh, yeah. You know, there's no one that's free of that fantasy. And when it doesn't happen, when you lose your 100th contest, even when you lose round one of a contest to a fucking hack-ass, shitty comic, the first thing people do, and I'm no different, is go, who can I blame this on? All right, who can I blame this on? How was I wronged? Because if I was wronged, I don't have any shortcomings. If I was wronged, I'm as good as I always thought I was, and now I have a struggle against success story instead of, like, maybe I just need to get better and face that.
Yeah.
So then there's a lot of, well, that guy fucking went up and used a hack joke, and it was similar to mine, and then I couldn't tell mine, and that guy
was racist.
Yeah.
Well, let me say this, because what you said is true. You always envision, oh, I'm going to be the one who takes off. They're going to notice me. Everybody takes 5-10 years, but I'm going to be the exception. I'm going to be the guy who gets there.
I'm going to be the BJ Penn of comedy.
Let me just say this. The best gift you've ever been given is the fact that you were not successful when you first started. You have no idea what that would look like. Because I've gone back and looked at some of my original material, which I have on tape.
Don't do that.
Yeah, you will see, holy shit, I'm glad this was not my presentation to the world. I'm glad I had time to hone this and get better and better and still keep getting better and better, still have the time to make it a little bit sharper. I'm glad I have that, because if this had been what I put out and everybody's seen, I would be so fucking embarrassed right now.
Right, right. Speaking of which, when you've come off stage, whether it be early on or even today, what has been your favorite backhanded compliment?
Oh, so many to choose from.
There is.
I do.
I put a list on Facebook of some of mine that I'll revisit.
Okay, so I have an interesting one. When I first started comedy, I never told my parents or anybody I was related to that I was going to start doing stand-up. I was not the guy who was like, ooh, guess what, guys? I'm a stand-up comic before I had done my first open mic. In fact, I did a bunch of open mics. I did those bringers. I did open mics. I started my own show. I did Kumite for 2 years. I'd been doing some decent-sized shows, both traveling and otherwise.
And his family still does not know.
Yeah. Well, basically, I only told them, like, I don't know, 2 years ago less. I told them very, very recently that I was doing it. And this was after I had done Vegas. This was after I had gone and done military bases. This is after I had done, like, literally sold out 400-person shows at the Reuben H. Fleet.
Well, not you.
No, it was me. They came for a general show.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. That is not you selling out. That's you being on a show that sold out.
Well, I was the only comedian. They came for a museum exhibit, and then they filled it.
He was the only PhD.
Yeah, that's right.
But the guy helped.
So I had waited a long time because of that exact reason. I knew in the back of my head, I don't want to tell my parents or my family I am doing this thing and have them come see me suck. I am going to wait until I am established, until I have certain credentials, until I know I have a solid set before I do that. So eventually I do that, and I invite them to one of the big shows at the Reuben H. Fleet. And in these shows, we're in their big, giant dome theater, seats 400 people. Usually it's coordinated with a museum event, so the thing is packed. There's 400 people crammed into this thing, and I do 25 to 35 minutes, depending on what's going on. And that is that. And I'm technically the headliner of that show. I'm also the opener because there's nobody else there. And my parents came. I didn't even tell them when I told them to show up to this thing. I told them, I'd like you to show up to this museum event that I'm going to be a part of. I still didn't tell them I was a stand-up comic. I waited till they were in the parking lot of the show. And I told them, by the way, for the last 3 years, I have been a stand-up comic. Those times I told you I was traveling to Vegas to work, I wasn't doing archaeology. I was doing comedy.
And they disowned him. Right. They said, you are not our son.
This is sounding like someone that comes out as a transvestite.
Yeah, right? And so I
expected to take him a trench coat, just lingerie.
I told them, and they kind of gave me a weird look, like, oh, interesting. And my grandma was with them.
You failed me for the last time.
They
not even a PhD. I have no son.
They wandered around the museum for a while, checked out the exhibits and stuff, and was really excited about the night. And then they went into the theater. Again, 400 people crammed into this theater. I do a show. It goes really, really well.
He brought out a bunch of kids, and they did a rendition of Natural Born Killers.
It goes really well because this is my crowd. These are science geeks, perfect audience for me. So just like we talked about those bringer shows before, it worked out really well. Great laughs. I came up to them afterwards. So what'd you guys think? They take like way too long a pause, like one of those like solid 5-second count pauses, and go.
They look at each other too.
And they go, I'm surprised so many people were here. Oh, and at first I went, yeah, right? Like 400 people, is that amazing? And then I was like, oh.
Wow.
Oh, okay. All right. Fair enough. And
Bobby, can I ask you, have they been like that with some of your other accomplishments, though?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
That's very interesting. That's very interesting, because there's something I've noticed recently. Johnny Carson. I read his biography last year, and his mother from a foreign country. So is yours, I believe.
Yep.
And also someone who, you know, after he had all the success, it was taking, you know, flying around to Los Angeles and showing her his palatial estates, just, you know, the biggest mansion ever. She'd walk around like, I saw Bob Hope's in a magazine and it was bigger. And then it was like, and then even so much to be like, I can't stay here. It's tacky. I want to go to a hotel. And there was a producer I was listening to. This guy had, this guy has produced everything. His name escapes me, but he was put on the Academy Lifetime Achievement Awards, and he told his mom, "Mom, I'm getting a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Academy Awards," and she said, "You know, who am I to question their decision?" Now, those guys, all foreign mothers, all very successful. Yeah, and you're a success yourself, I consider you.
Right.
Now, well, as a PhD.
God damn it.
But do you think that has something to do with the foreign mothers, or do you think is that just because I think there's a bit of narcissism to
it? Could be. It could be. I think it's a little bit of like, one, this is not what we consider success, you know, because like to them it would be more like, oh, you're a physician or a lawyer or something like that.
Right.
And so no matter how successful you are at something outside of certain fields, it's not viewed as success to people from other countries. You know, my mom and grandma were both at that show. My grandma's comment, by the way, to me at the end of the show was, I was like, Grandma, how'd you like the show? And she barely speaks English. And she's like, you can talk very fast. And I was like, okay, another weird backhanded compliment.
Very nice.
I think to them, when they're like, oh, yeah, our country was invaded by Nazis, and then when they left, the communists came and things got really bad. Like, I think anytime you come from a place where the Nazis left and then things got really bad, you start thinking like, well, what use is that? You know, it doesn't matter how funny you are. If we suddenly get invaded by North Korea tomorrow and we have to flee like refugees
to
another country.
I'm going
to
make Kim Jong-il laugh.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, well, a doctor, you're going to be able to use that. A lawyer, you're going to be able to use that. Your funny ha-has, that's bullshit.
Right. Okay.
You know what your problem is? You did not come up with a catchphrase. First step in success.
What are you talking about? What are you talking about?
I can say it like that.
What about you guys? What do you guys think is your backhanded compliment?
There's ones that I get a lot. And I don't know if I have one that is really stinging and biting, but one that I got a lot early on is when I was still bringing friends to the show that had never seen me before. And, you know, this is their first introduction to me doing stand-up. I'd get this one a lot, which was, oh, my God, you were so good. I'm so happy you did well because I seriously thought you were going to suck and I wouldn't know what to say to you. Which is like, okay, I'm glad you're being honest.
Right.
But at the same time, why did you think I was going to suck? But no, that probably
that is still a legitimate compliment, though, right? Like, it's not as backhanded because all the only backhanded part is they had a preconception you were going to suck, but you didn't suck, right?
True. Okay.
It's not.
Right.
It's not quite. You didn't suck as bad as we thought, right?
Right.
Here's one I see a lot, and this is weird because it seems like a compliment on the surface, and it also cuts both directions.
Okay.
Especially when in a showcase, there's a bunch of comics, and you're all like standing to do the greet at the end.
Yep.
And they walk back, and you know you had a good show, and like. They shake your hand. Oh, you were really funny. And they go to the next guy. You were really funny too. Next guy. You were really funny. I'm like,
yeah.
You just watered down the compliment.
Right.
Now, that's one direction. The other direction is the same way. When someone else did really well on the show and they tell them they were funny, then they look at you like, oh, you were good too. And you're like, you're just saying that.
Yeah.
Oh, sometimes they haven't even said that. They're like, you are so awesome. You should be famous. You are so funny. They look at me and go, how's it going?
Oh, yeah. I've gotten that one before, too. I once opened for Patrick DeGeer. He's one of those comedians who I told you about, who's a headliner who was very good to me and took me around and showed me a bunch of places. I think we were at the Ontario Improv, and I opened for him. And I thought I did halfway decently. I didn't think I killed anything, but it was all right. And then later on, people were coming out, and they were talking to us, and they did the, you did a great job. And every once in a while, people would come by me, hey, you did great. I really liked it. You know, it was short, but it was great. And I was like, thank you. That means a lot to me. I had one person go up to Patrick, shake his hand. That was amazing. That was so funny. I can't believe it. I want to see you next time you're in town. And walked over to me. You'll get there.
Oh, that's a bummer.
That's not really a backhanded compliment.
Yeah, it's really more of a...
Where was the compliment?
That was an encouraging insult, yeah, more exactly. than
it. I've always liked this one. Is I've had the friends that had no background in comedy. They're not a comic at all. It was like, you were good. you were good. Why would they say it so steadfastly like that? Like, hold on.
Right. There's
before
more.
You hear what I was about to say, I just want to say, you were good. Having said that, that guy after you was amazing. I'm like, you know, you didn't have to. Okay, I get that you liked him better.
Right.
That happened in New York with my family from Philly driving up to see me. Where, listen, I was like the third on a five-man show. John Fugelsang was headlining. And this guy, I was like, Adam, why am I not the feature? I went to the booker. I'm like, my family's coming in. I came the longest way. I'm on tour right now. I get John Fugelsang is a celebrity, but I mean, come on, maybe the feature. He's like, you can't follow this guy that was in the feature, right? And I was like, bullshit. I was on a hot streak. This was on the Endless Bummer tour last summer. I was like, oh no, I'm on this fucking hot streak. I killed an Amity. I fucking I murdered it the whole way. And all of a sudden, he's like, you can't. So I agreed to go third out of five. I'm like, yeah, go ahead and follow that shit right there. He went up and just destroyed. I had no chance. I was so happy that I didn't have to follow him. And so anyway, I'm like, okay, great. The show was in perfect succession. It went in order of how funny the people were.
That's always great.
And ended with a celebrity. It was great. Then afterwards, all my family could talk about was how funny the guy after me was. I'm like, all right, I get it. I didn't bomb, you understand. Oh, no, you were great. But, oh, he was so funny. Oh, my God. Do you remember his second bit? I remember his second bit.
Have you guys gotten this one before? This is always a good one after the show when people come up. They do the preface it with, I've never gone to a live comedy show before. Pause. You were good. I'm really more of a Louis C.K. fan. Like, I get it, but he's not here right now. It's not the choice between him and myself.
Oh, did I? You know, I had that exact thing where I overheard it. I don't know if I've told this story before, but there used to be a really great room here in San Diego. Or actually, it was more specifically Escondido, North County. It was called Mike's Barbecue, all right?
Yes, been there.
Yeah, and when you walk in, you're like, oh, my God, what have I done? Me and my then road partner, Brian Bartel, we got booked to, like, co-headline it. We're like, we walk in, you see like the coal and the stacked wood.
It looks like the worst gig you're ever.
Yeah, you're like, Jesus, what do we do? How much are we getting paid? $20 for this? And like people are sitting there with barbecue sauce over their faces. And all of a sudden the guy goes up and goes, you ready to start the show? Everyone turns around.
Turn.
Yeah!
They're ready.
And like every word they hang on and laugh hysterically.
Wow.
So it was a great show. I was like, my God, how is a place called Mike's Barbecue in Escondido such a great show? So anyway, afterwards, everyone's kind of like leaving. We're waiting for the promoter to give us our bucks, you know, and maybe have another beer. And I'm in the men's room. And all of a sudden I'm in the stall taking a leak. And all of a sudden I hear across the men's room, they don't see me. So what'd you think of the show? Now I'm doing that thing. Like, oh.
Yep.
Candid. This is I can finally get a little candid look at how I did. This is the exact words. Yeah, they're all right, but if I'm going to come all the way out to a comedy show, I'm going to want some big names like Chris Rock or have you heard of Louis C.K.? Now, he's funny.
He's a little underground, but...
It was all I could do not to kick open the bathroom stall. Like, I'm sorry that Jerry Seinfeld and Dave Chappelle will not be joining us this evening at a free show at Mike's Barbecue in Escondido, you ungrateful fuck.
Louis C.K. is a buffet comic. Yeah. He will not do a barbecue.
Right. Any shrimp or nothing.
Ryan took this the complete wrong way. What he should have done is, since they still couldn't see him, he should have just loudly proclaimed, I thought that Ryan Shores was the best comedian there, and then walked out of the bathroom briskly.
No, I just peed on a toilet paper and threw it over the stall at him.
I don't know if this counts as a backhanded compliment, but like when someone's leaving a show and they're like, oh, you were so funny. I love that bit you did about this. Hey, you should say this.
Oh, they give you
like,
tags?
You think it's that fucking easy, you motherfucker? Really? You think you just wrote a tag for me? Fuck off.
Well, I guess when we come back next week, we can talk about how the bachelor party went.
Yeah, assuming that we're all here and nobody's cheated on anybody that's kicked them out of the house.
And I'll try and give it another whirl with listener questions, because y'all fucking let me down this one. All right, let's call it a week. I'm Ryan for Dave and Bobby saying see you next week. Cruising with the Twos. She's stupid. Yeah, time passing by.
motherfucking time is passing by.